physical part of cosmic strings. And before I just go ahead, I should point out that the brain inflationary scenario predicts a number of measurable parameters that will be carried out by cosmic microwave background experiments. Okay. However, as I said, that those parameters will very much sort of merge with many other models, and it's very hard to distinguish from one to the other models. And so we have to do is that here we have additional properties where cosmic strings are produced. I should point out that you can invent scenarios very much like hybrid inflation where cosmic strings are also produced, but generically in those models, the cosmic string properties will be just like a billion Higgs model. And furthermore, you can construct such a model, but there's no motivation. The motivation usually start from grand unified theory, simple group breakdown to smaller groups, and you don't start with the U1 and break it down. So, but you can do it. Okay. So let me start. Of course, we just have the inflationary universe, which happened very early, and we have said that you solve a number of problems, generate the energy matter in our universe, because all the matter, radiation, and even dark matter, presumably, are coming from nothing but the inflaton potential. Okay? They are not exist. They are non-existent before inflation. Whatever appear before inflation will be inflated away. So this will start a hot Big Bang, generate the density perturbation that seed structure formation, and generate the temperature perturbations that's observed in WMAP and COBE, and a number of other experiments like Boomerang, Darcy, Maxima, and now quite a number of others. Okay? Roughly over a dozen experiments have measured the temperature fluctuations. So this is WMAP. This is 2003 data. They have 2.5 years more data by now, which haven't been released. But the statement is that it's support for inflation if anything strengthens. Okay. So this is the brain world in a cartoon way describing. That means we live in a three spatial dimensions, which are inside brain, with the galaxy, with all the structure we see. And all the visible matter will be there. The dark matter may or may not be in our brain. Dark matter can be in a neighbor brain. We don't know. But there's a word. I bear pun. Ah, dark energy. Dark energy is, of course, we don't know what exactly dark energy is. But most likely it's a cosmological constant or something similar to a cosmological constant. And that would be everywhere, of course. That actually coming from integrating out the whole six compactified dimensions. And it's a result of that. Okay. And in the particular vacuum we construct, if you have a supersymmetric vacuum, then either have cosmological constant zero or negative, which corresponds to ADS space. But so if you have a positive cosmological constant, typically you break supersymmetry a little bit, and that can be achieved at the same time when you stabilize the Kähler moduli by talking about non-perturbative effect coming from the strong interacting gauge group. Okay, so that's possible. So in brain inflation, we have this kind of picture, which are two brains which have a lot of stuff, but inflation rapidly remove everything, and the brain move towards each other, inflation taking place in the direction which is along the brains. When it collide, then you have a lot of energy density around, and presumably the heat up universe. And here I draw also the cosmic strings. They can be floating out or in the brain, and the universe starts cooling, and the cosmic string will evolve as well as the density perturbation that provide the seeds to the structure formation. Okay, so this is really a simple, minor picture, but captures some of the essence of what we're talking about. Okay. So, it's also important that in the scenario we have, like type 2b, there's no D0 of the two brains, because all brains are odd in spatial dimensions. As a result, when the D3, D3 bar collide, they only produce cosmic strings, which are D1 brains and fundamental strains. They don't produce monopoles, which will be like D0 brains, or domain walls, which will be like D2 brains. Okay? So it's known in the 80s, very well known, that if you produce monopoles, then it will be disastrous, because it goes like 1/8 cubed while the universe is in radiation phase, so all the matter, what we consider matter, quarks and leptons, will actually be in a relativistic moving and radiation, and that will go like 1/8 fourth. And so as a result, the monopole will rapidly dominate the density of the universe, and that certainly is not what we have. Okay, that will overclose the universe. And typically that would be overclosed by many orders of magnitude, like some 50 orders of magnitude too big. And domain wall is the same thing. So since cosmic string is somewhere in between monopoles and domain wall, naively we would say that it goes like 1/8 squared, and that would be disastrous. But we argued last time that because of the interaction among the cosmic strings, which don't happen in monopoles, and which happen too fast or too frustrated in the domain wall case, that in cosmic string, you will cut the density down to behave like 1/8 fourth during radiation. And actually, it would behave like 1/8 cubed during matter-dominated universe. So you will always provide a finite fixed fraction of the critical density. Okay. So in that sense, cosmic string is safe. As I said, the whole idea about cosmic string had been around for sometimes in the 80s. It was proposed to generate density perturbation and as an alternative to inflation. So there's a lot of work done, because in the 80s, it's not clear that inflation is better or cosmic strings are better, and they are sort of competing scenarios. I should point out that the inflation solved the flatness, the homogeneity, the horizon problem, and the overabundance of defect problems, which cosmic string does not solve. But cosmic string does provide a density perturbation spectrum, which is quite good for structure formation. So during that time, people worked very hard, and there's a lot of work done. And you can look up literature. It's something like 1,000 papers been written on the subject. So we are certainly not the first wave. Because of the excitement of cosmic strings, in 85, we didn't attempt to identify them with fundamental superstrings. And he himself recognized it failed. And as I described earlier, it failed for a number of reasons. So in the early 90s, COBE data came in on the cosmic microwave background measurements. And it disfavors cosmic strings. And by late 1990s, the cosmic microwave background data supports inflation and actually rule out cosmic strings as an explanation to the density perturbations. Of course, more or less the same time, as the cosmic string community sort of suffer from the distress of not agreeing with data, string theory, of course, proposed D-brains. And what we're doing is that we use the D-brain scenario to consider brain world and brain inflation. And now we produce cosmic strings. But these cosmic strings have a lower tension and are secondary to inflation. So they're not competing with inflation, but rather like inflation is the main cause and the cosmic strings are like the dessert. Okay. So this actually sort of revives the interest in cosmic strings. And at the moment, more simulations are being done and more detail are being studied. Okay. So we have cosmic string, and I've described how the naive density actually will be chopped down to a lower density as the cosmic string evolves, due to the reason that cosmic string interacts itself. They chop up themselves, okay, in a way which is quite helpful. So this is what the simulation people have done. And they just take some cosmic string and give the interaction and let it evolve. And the evolution is behaving in a way which will approach a scaling solution. And the approach of scaling actually is rather robust. More than three groups have done the simulation, and they all find the approach of scaling. The difference between them is that what's the numerical density finally you get, And that's limited by how small structure you can go to, okay? Because no matter what supercomputer you use, you're limited by size, and you can only go to a certain small distance. And we don't know that as you go smaller and smaller distance, how much wiggles, how much kinks and cuffs the string we have in the evolution. So the overall picture is very clear, but the details require more understanding. So we discussed roughly a simple picture how this cosmic string network will evolve to a scaling limit. By scaling limit, I mean that it will approach to a case where the total density in a cosmic string will be a fixed fraction of the critical density in our universe. Okay. Now, people want to do more, and there's two things we can do more. One is do actually experiment. And it turned out if you take helium-3 or helium-4, you can quench it, and you produce a lot of vortices, and you can watch the evolution of the vortices and to see what happened to them. Okay? That way, you have some idea, at least experimentally, does it approach some sort of scaling solution. Of course, in this case, the universe doesn't expand, but you can still look at the equivalent of a scaling solution. And actually, that was done in the 80s and early 90s by a number of groups for both helium-3 and helium-4, and they watch the properties and scaling appears. So this is both an experimental simulation all seem to indicate that scaling is a natural outcome of string network or vortex network. So here we try to write down a model which is a little bit more general than a model we had before. In fact, you can do, last time, yesterday we discussed a one-scale model, see why the scaling solution is an attractive fixed point. You can now generalize that model by many different ways, introduce more than one scale, two scale, three scales people have done. And another way to do is do a velocity dependent. That means that the cosmic string all have some velocity. Okay? And then this is a generalization of the model by introducing a velocity dependence piece. So here again is the density, how it evolved. This, of course, is due to the expansion of the universe. And this is due to self-chopping with V coming here. And this is due to the interaction. Okay. So this is a little bit more general model than before. And the reason that people study this model, or construct this particular model, is that this model, after fitting the data of V, which is really surprisingly relativistic, because this is the average velocity of the strings, and choosing the seek two parameters. With these two parameters, actually, you can fit the data very well. Okay? So you want to have a model with as few parameters as possible and fit the data well. And this is a model which did well. This omega, of course, is equation of state. It's dictated essentially roughly by how average velocity is. If average velocity is zero, essentially means that it goes like a squared. So this is equation of state. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take this model and apply to PQ, because PQ is sort of first non-trivial generalization of what we had before. And it would be nice to see that what happened to the evolution of a PQ network in a cosmological context that we would like to study. Since the interaction has been calculated and the spectrum known, then we can feed into a model and look at its behavior. A better way to do it, actually, is to do a numerical simulation, which some groups are trying to do at the moment, but it's certainly rather non-trivial and rather complicated, and we don't know the result, but we can do something simpler by generalizing the velocity-dependent one-scale model. You can generalize two-scale model, three-scale model, doesn't matter. Okay? So we take that, and now, instead of having one equation describing how the density of one type of string evolved, because now we have PQ, we have which PQ run over many types, in fact, infinite number of types. So we have actually an infinite number of set of equations which couple to each other. So this is alpha stands for a particular type of PQ, and this term is how evolved as function of time. And this is essentially due to the expansion of universe. And we again have self-chopping off the type of string interact among themselves. And then we have other interaction, which is like for alpha type, you can have two other type of strings combined, joined to form alpha, or your alpha interact with another type of string and form beta, such that means remove. So that means that consider any particular alpha type, say 0, 1, and the 0, 1 can interact with 1, 0 and get removed because they form 1, 1, or the some other type 1, 1 and 0, 1 will interact to form 1, 0. Okay, so you can both get produced by this different types of interaction, and you can get removed by interacting with other type strings. So, and these couplings are calculated, okay, by Jackson, Jones, and Paczynski, and we can use some approximate form of that. And so now we have an infinite set of equations. Now we can plug in and evolve them. Okay. Naively, you would think that one may not be able to solve it, but turn out they converge rapidly. Okay. So that's the nice thing about it. It converges rapidly. And so this is the result of this calculation. So one can start from an arbitrary density. So let's look at the solid lines only, okay? Look at only the solid lines. So this is the total initial density of cosmic strings. And this is the amount of 0, 1, 1, 0, okay? So that means that initially we populate the universe with 0, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, 1, 5, 4, 5, 6, you know, all populate, right, like 50 type of strings. So this is really a small fraction of total, and let it evolve, follow those equations. And you see the total density, we approach rapidly to a constant value fraction. We measure in terms of density as a fraction of the total density, which is called omega. And at the same time, the particular 0, 1 plus 1, 0 will evolve to a fixed value. Next, we can consider the very sort of this fade line. This is a total density, but now what we have initially, we only put 0, 1, and 1, 0, nothing else. Okay, we just put them in. So the only type created is 0, 1, 1, 0. So essentially that's the total, and you find that the total density evolved also approach a fixed value, and the 0, 1, 1, 0 also approach a finite value, which is only a fraction. And the dashed line is a third choice, and you get very small density. So instead of putting a lot of them, we create very few, okay? So again, they rapidly approach the scaling solution. So this again illustrates that the scaling solution is an attractor. Doesn't matter what initial condition you start from, we can in fact differ by orders of magnitude initial conditions and different distributions that they will rapidly, and here's A, roughly around 1,000 change in E, which means that by the time you have 10 to the 10 GeV, 10 to the 9 GeV, you reach 10 to 8 GeV, you pretty much have reached a scaling solution. So in that sense, the scaling is very robust. Okay? You can also take that, instead of taking the string coupling, the calculator, you can take some other coupling, okay? And then you can find that the string actually frustrated and will lead to disaster. So the fact that the coupling is dictated by superstring theory is a very important point. Okay. But once you have that interaction, then it becomes very generic. The reason that this happened is because that once the string bind, they always release some energy. So as you bind more and more, the energy is released to gravitational radiation, for example. And that way, it can cut down the density rapidly. And because of that property, we can actually look at the more non-trivial strings that we talk about, given by the case with 7 quantum numbers, and you can look that the binding energy is reasonably large, that you can expect that even the more non-trivial 7 quantum number tension spectrum string will still scale, okay? Although that calculation have not been done. But. So the reason it scales is the following, that the high tension strings, the density drop rapidly. So typically, the number density of PQ string will drop like it's tension to the 8th power. So that means that the universe will be dominated by low tension strings, essentially 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, and a few more, and then rapidly goes up. So we expect, in a simple case, maybe 3 or 4 types of strings, which will be relatively abundant, but the rest will be, the density will go down very fast. Okay? It's power-like, but not exponential. But it's a high enough power such that ensures the scaling. Okay. So this is a key point, is that if you produce a lot of cosmic string, doesn't matter what the initial density or the initial distribution of the different type of strings there are, they will rapidly approach a scaling solution, and so the physics is all dictated by that scaling solution. Okay? So that's why I did not spend time to discuss how much initially the cosmic string are produced, okay? Because that turned out to be an irrelevant factor. In fact, you can put the production, change the initial production by 20 orders of magnitude, it will not change the physics that will come out of it due to the scaling solution. So we also discussed that the overall tension, because so far we have tensions with the given spectrum, but the overall normalization of tension is obtained by comparing with the observational data. Okay. So, and it's given by the range, again, I mean, this is the key number. Think about 10 to the minus 7, it's a generic number. Okay. So the value is bounded somewhere between 5 times 10 to the minus 7 to 4 times 10 to the minus 10. This number is a little bit soft, in a sense that, you know, if you say that the bound change effect of 2, I'm not going to argue with you because of the details. Okay. But roughly, it's somewhere between those two numbers. And then the upper bound really is coming from WMAP, because from brain inflation, we can actually take the value a little bit larger, but observational bound limits to 5 times 10 to the minus 7. So with that, now we can ask the question about more observations, okay? So here I just want to remind you that the actual spectrum is much richer, and that it will be very useful, of course, to measure more than one type of strings and look at the Y-shaped junctions, and that way we can really sort of pinpoint what's going on. So the question now is, okay, so if we say there's cosmic strings and there's a lot of them, and the question is, if you look at a simulation, based on what people know, even applying to the non-trivial case that we have many quantum numbers, first, how many are there? Okay. That's a number that we really don't know, but basing on the simple analysis people have done so far, extrapolating from that, we expect something like 40 or 100 long strings stretching across the sky within our horizon. And then, so if you take the simple abelian Higgs model, the number is roughly 40. If you take the more complicated models, it can be somewhere between, I don't know, 10 to 100 long strings. Means that strings that stretch across our sky. Of course, they are loops, okay? But, you know, if there's, the loops are so big that, as far as we can tell, it's stretch across the sky. Then there will be a lot of smaller loops, and the loops will have size of, you know, part of universe, you know, size of galaxy, a cluster of galaxies, size of maybe stars, and all the way down to smaller loops, okay? And once you get to the loops too small, we don't know how many there are, because the simulation won't allow us to simulate to such a small distance scale. Compared with the size of the universe, a cosmic string loop of the size of a galaxy is very, very small. But we expect there will be some thousands of loops around, okay, of different sizes. And the real small one, of course, will also radiate and rapidly disappear. Okay? So generically, we are thinking about of hundreds of long strings and thousands of big loops. Okay? And remember, I also talk about how these strings will oscillate. And generically, they will oscillate, they will change shape, and they will have cuts and kinks generated, disappear, appear, disappear, all the time. Okay? So that's roughly the picture that I would like you to keep at the back of your mind. Okay? So, the way to discuss, to search for it, is under the heading here I give, is so lensing, which we'll discuss in detail. Cosmic microwave background radiation, that we'll discuss a little bit, somewhat, because actually this is what ruled out the cosmic string at a level of providing seeds for structure formation originally, so it must give us some clue if it's there or not there. And then we'll talk about gravitational wave bursts. These are three to discuss. Delta T over T, I will discuss a little bit. And then the last two, I'm not going to discuss it, because at the moment, they're not very competitive with the other ones. And the one is called pulsar timing and stochastic gravitation radiation background. Okay? So I will discuss the first four, but the first one is probably the most significant. See what? Yes, yes, I would discuss a little bit on that. That would be gravitational wave bursts. That would be the third and the last one. But the last one is probably not as good as the third one, so I would discuss a little bit of gravitational wave bursts. Okay? That would be LIGO involved. Okay. Lensing. So this is well-known property in the sense that if you have some matter, then the light coming towards that will get bent, and as a result, that will provide a lensing effect. So if you have some object somewhere, and in between there's some cluster of galaxy or dark matter or galaxy, then whatever you have, a source image will get distorted, multiplied, and so we look very much like the various cases here, okay? So in fact, of the three cases here, I think one of them actually is real, is what's observed, okay? But I wasn't sure that this one or that one, okay? So one of them actually is worse, one actually observed, one is simulation. And this actually, by looking at the lensing of a galaxy, due to some intermediate matter, you can reconstruct the density of those matter, and people actually done that. Okay? So this is usual lensing by some cluster of galaxies, for example. Okay? In cosmic string, the lensing is different. Okay? Because what we happen is that we have a cosmic string, which is, let me say, sitting at this point, which is pointing towards us. Okay, so it's coming off the board. And it will change the geometry around it. If you have Minkowski space, it remains Minkowski, and you won't notice it unless you go around it. If you go around it, the presence of a cosmic string because of the tension will lead to a deficit angle. So if you have a 2 pi going around it, if you have a cosmic string now, you go around it, it's less than 2 pi. The difference in that angle is 2 pi g mu. Again, g mu comes in. And so it's something like 10 to the minus 6, 10 to the minus 5. Okay. So it's a very small deficit angle, but it can happen. Okay, that's due to tension. So what this is doing is that if you have an object which is sitting behind a cosmic string, then what happened is that you will see a double image because that this identified with this is like that this point identified, they're the same point. Okay. This point is the same as that because this wedge is removed and they identified. So you will see we are on Earth. If there's cosmic string right between the galaxy and us, then you will see two galaxies, which is one is translationally shifted from the other one with no distortion. Okay. So you expect to see a double image if there's a cosmic string. So the difference between cosmic string lensing and usual gravitational lensing is that you see a double image, no distortion, while in the other case, typically you see odd number images. In fact, if a point source, the number image is always odd, and furthermore, they're distorted by because depend on the mass distribution of the intervening lensing galaxy. So this provides distinctive features. And in 2003, there was a paper which claimed this lensing event. Okay? Let's see. Before going ahead, I should point out that in 1990, around that time, there's also a paper which claimed to see cosmic string lensing event. And it's by Kawi and Hu, and they claimed to see a dozen of them. Okay? And later, you can radio astronomy look at more closely all of them, and they're all actually not the same. That means that it's not double image, but rather two different galaxies, and they look similar, but if you look carefully, they're really different. So from that perspective, we have to be very careful when we see a double image that it may just happen to be two galaxies which happen to look the same. Okay? So the evidence they have is that they look exactly the same because they can analyze the spectrum, and this is for one and the other one, and they divide them and they find it's one. Okay, so it's a very as far as their resolution goes, they have exactly the same spectrum at two different wavelength bands, and furthermore, the redshift is the same, so that indicates that they are at equal distance. Okay, so it's not like you have one close by, the other one further away, then that's obviously not Lansing. Okay, so they argue that it's a 99.9% confidence level that they're identical spectra. Now, if you say that this is really a cosmic string Lansing event, okay, then you can say, okay, I measure how far they separate, and from that I can calculate G mu. And G mu is roughly some number like that. Okay. Which, remember, this is within what we have. We have to talk about 5 × 10⁻¹. This is 4 × 10⁻¹. Of course, the detail depends on how fast the cosmic string is moving. If the cosmic string is moving fast, then the tension actually can be lower in order to give the separation. You see, the separation is roughly 1.9 arc second. Okay. So that was published 2 years ago. However, there's very little attention paid to it, first because they never give the coordinates, so nobody can check it. Okay. Yeah, so now we know the coordinates because you can actually look at the other papers they've written and you can find the coordinates. And actually just last few days, they have a new paper out. The director of the observatory gave them extra time to measure that more accurately in a different wavelength, and they have new data, and they show that the spectrum of the two images, and when you divide one by the other one, essentially one. So as far as the resolution they have and the accuracy they can get, they claim that they're identical spectra to 99.9% accuracy. Okay. Yes. Yes. So what you are saying is that if you have a cosmic string, then you see one Lansing event, then since the string had to stretch around, there should be other events close by, other candidates close by. So what they've done is that the reason they see the event is because they look at a particular part of sky, a deep field. That means that usually you look at the survey, typically look at sky which don't go very deep in Z. What they did is that they look at half a degree in the southern hemisphere, and within that half a degree, they find 50,000 objects. And so which have, that's why they get a good resolution, because they only look at a small patch of sky. So, Yeah, that's very hard. That's a Sloan Digital Sky Survey, and then that's the 2-degree field. But those are, not very deep field, because, well, you know, if you want to look a bigger patch of sky, you can't look as deep as if you look a tiny patch, okay? So they are concerned with the half a degree patch. Yes? Right. Yeah, so both this question is answered by the next slide. So they look within that the half degree, and they see one event which called CSL1, which is what we describe a double image. Okay, so that's the event they have, CSL1. It's a double image. Now, then they look at nearby, because as you said, if it's cosmic string nearby, you should see other such events, and so other possible candidates. And they look at other possible candidates, and they label these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus the CSL1. And this is 16 arc minute versus 16 arc minute, okay? So they find that the other one have a possibility of also being some sort of double image, okay? But they don't have enough data to analyze them yet. Maybe by now they have, but, okay? So if you have imagination, you can easily think that I can draw a Y shape through these points. But double image actually is not the best thing to do. So here is a cosmic string moving in front of a galaxy. And you can see that as you pass through, if the cosmic string not line up with the galaxy and we as observer, you will see only a single image. But as the cosmic string move past, you notice that it will give you a double image only for a certain distance, and then, but you're always this position which you will give it an image and a half or something, okay? So if you look back at the image, that they are relatively close, okay? So they're relatively close, the two images. So that means that it's very hard to put, say, a spiral galaxy in between to lens them. So if you have images very far apart, then you can say, oh, there's some spiral galaxy sitting at the edge which can lens them. So in the case that when they're relatively close, so it's very hard to put something in between besides a cosmic string to lens them. But it also means that if you have other events, there's no reason it should sit exactly behind it, which will give you a double image, but it's more likely to give you an image which is something which is one full image, maybe the other one is only partial. Okay? So actually, this is actually a much better signature of cosmic string. Okay? So the double image is not the best, but something which is one image and the other one, part of it is exactly like this, no distortion, and yet it gets chopped off. Okay? Like somebody take a scissor and cut it out. Okay? And this actually would be a much better signature than this, because there's no way astronomically you can produce such a picture besides cosmic strings. Okay? So even though they look at the other one, which are not exactly the same luminosity, they differ a little bit, and that may just due to this. So something that they should look more closely. Okay. Oh, so look at where the cosmic string sit depends, okay? If the cosmic string sit right behind the galaxy, you get two double images, but if it sit a little bit off, if you sit way off, you only get one image. Then as you sit a little bit off, you will get image and a half. Okay, so this picture now is that the cosmic string is sitting way off from the line of sight between the galaxy and us. Okay, so let me go over this again. But the galaxy is not moving with respect to us. But I just say that suppose the cosmic string is changing the position. I don't mean that literally it's moving that fast. But I just say as the cosmic string sits at a different position between the line of sight, then what we will see. Okay, so that's the picture. So, okay, so you can see that sometimes you get an image and a half. Okay, and that's much better signature. Yes. Oh, the partial image should. So this partial image should be exactly the same as this part. Okay, except with the part chop off. Well, so depends on who is looking, right? So if you're looking at this, okay, in this case, the total luminosity of A and B is within the error bars identical, okay? So question is, will there be enough resolution of this? It's a matter of how much telescope time you put in and how good your resolution is. Certainly, if you go to radio astronomy, you're doing very long baseline, you can resolve this easily 100 times better than this. Okay. So that you should be able to distinguish. So if they're very far apart like these quasars, then you can explain it by something else, by putting, say, some object in between. So this is another quasar event that we observed. These are two, as far as they can tell, pretty identical. But on the other hand, you can say there's maybe some faint spiral galaxy in between, which you don't really easily see. But so you can explain it by someone, well, if they're far enough apart. Okay? But this is not far enough apart, but because this quasar is smaller. So if you take this as a cosmic string, you also get a tension which is very close to what it is. But on the other hand, that there's other ways to explain this event. So people didn't take it too seriously. Oh, I should go back. That's also argument by a group which claimed that in the most well-known gravitational lensing event, they find there's some oscillating properties of the light luminosity, and they argue that this is due to oscillating string loop. But this evidence is much weaker than the double lensing of CSL1. The other way to do it, of course, is that, well, if we see a double image as we have, then that means and the cosmic string is moving, then the Doppler effect will generate a temperature difference between the two sides. So behind it is a little bit hotter than in front of it. And that temperature difference is given by 8 pi g mu v velocity times the Lorentz factor. Okay? So that means that you know the cosmic strain, you can measure the difference between the two sides of temperature and see if there's a temperature difference. And that temperature difference will be defined a line, and that line is the cosmic strain. So there's a group which paper come out earlier this year by Low and Wright, which claimed that they take the cost, they take the WMAP first year data and look for this effect, and they find a two sigma effect from the WMAP data. Okay? First year. Now, that temperature difference is something which is like 30 microkelvin, which is somewhat measurable. But the WMAP data actually have a resolution of 20 arc minute, which is really not very good resolution. Okay? But so I don't know the meaning of this paper. Naively, I would ignore it because two sigma is really totally negligible, in fact. We will not pay any attention to it, except Wright is a collaborator of WMAP, and he have seen not only the first year data, he have seen the next 2 years of data. Okay, and when he write a paper titled Signatures of Cosmic String in Cosmic Microwave Background, I don't know what that means. Okay. So this depends on how fast it moves, okay, because the V gamma comes in. But if you use the other value, then you find that the velocity is like 0.9, a little bit fast. But on the other hand, we remember when we do string simulation, we find that average velocity is 0.67, 0.66. So 0.9 is, or 0.95 is not out of the, especially one particular segment can move very fast. So, but the significance is not so much this paper, but rather that he actually have seen 3.5 years data, which only 1 year data is being used. So wonder why you write a paper. So next we can go to CMB, cosmic microwave background spectrum. So here it's very faint. So inflation will give you the spectrum list, which we know this acoustic peak. Cosmic string will give you something very flat. So generically, if the cosmic string tension is what we have, then you would give something like this, which can easily be fit into this big acoustic peaks. Okay? But the important thing is that if you go to very high L, L this is like partial wave analysis. For L equals 1 is like 180 degrees, L equals 2 is like 90 degrees. So when you go to L equals 2,000 or 3,000, it's arc minutes. Okay? That as you go high L, the inflation actually dropped quite fast, and cosmic string has a long tail, and that at around 2,000 to 3,000, the cosmic string contribution can be as big and bigger than that of inflation. Now, WMAP can measure only to about 1,000. So to go to higher L, you have to use really telescope measure only a patch of sky. Okay? But you don't cover the whole sky, but measure a patch of sky where you can go to higher resolution. So there's a two groups measure called CIB, CBI, and cosmic microwave background imaging, and ECBAR, and they actually measure high L because they only look at a tiny patch of sky, and they find some excess of cosmic microwave temperature fluctuation, and it would be interesting to pin that down and to see that is excess over what we expect from inflation. This. How significant is, you can read by yourself, I don't know exactly how significant this is. It's that they don't have much data, so let me look at CBI. What they did, this is they integrated essentially from 2,000 to 3,000, okay? They integrated over this, and they get this point, which is bigger than the solid line is coming from inflation. Now, you can change the inflation a little bit by changing so-called the amount of fluctuation within our galaxy size, so-called sigma 8, or something called Sonnayev-Zeldovich effect, to make it a little bit bigger. Okay? But it's not easy to fit it. So, and the ECBAR data is consistent. Since these two groups measure the high L, they're consistent with each other, but ECBAR much bigger error bounds. So it's really a matter of, it's, I would say, intriguing, and clearly more data will be very helpful. So here's another way to find the cosmic string is that if you do the scalar inflation, then the density perturbation generated mostly is so-called the E mode. Okay, E mode. I should say that the photons that arrive at us are all linearly polarized. However, it can linearly polarize in a way which is like at any point it's like radially out, or it can be like curl. Okay, so observationally they consider this E mode and B mode. Okay, I should point out that both are linearly polarized, but that's just that how they appear. Okay, if you have a scalar inflation, then mostly are E mode, the B mode will be very small. So this is the temperature Tt correlation, which with the these acoustic peaks, which draw in a way, different way. And if you have electric mode, then this is the curve. And this is more or less WMAP has seen. What WMAP has seen really interference of temperature to E mode, which completely agrees with inflation. And the important thing is that the peak are shifted. Okay, so that's a significant effect which are predicted by inflation and measure. However, if you now look at B mode, which is given by this one, which is due to the tensor interaction, tensor perturbation or gravitational, this is too small to be observed because remember this is many order of magnitude down. Okay. But if you have cosmic string, you will also produce B mode, and this B mode will be given by these circles, which is significantly bigger than the R we talked about earlier. And so there's a better chance of seeing the B mode coming from cosmic strings than coming from the tensor modes in inflation. So this is another way to measure the effect of cosmic strings. So the other possibility is, again, cusps and kinks. Okay? So as we described earlier, that if you have a very simple string evolution wave equation, generically, you find cusps and kinks get produced all the time. Okay. So once you produce them, here by cusps and kinks is the following. A kink is very clear, just sort of the discontinuity at a slope. A cusp is where the discontinuity becomes such that the two pieces are tangential to each other. Okay. So in a sense, you can think cusp is a special case of kink, but turn out in terms of properties we are interested in, they are very different. So cusp will generate, so a cusp moving will bremsstrahlen gravitational radiation. Okay, so it will bremsstrahlen like a beam, and so is kink. So they're not generated everywhere, but they will be like a beam of radiation. So very much like an electron moving, it can, as you change the angle direction, then a beam of photon will be produced. And here, instead of photon, you will produce a gravitational wave. And they will come in a burst, and they will have a waveform. That means as you pass by, you have a waveform like this, which is very distinctive. Okay, this is T1/3, but T2/3 is similar. This is calculated by Damore and Vilenkin. So that means if you are at a LIGO, which measured gravitational wave on LIGO 2, or Virgo or TAM, what you will see is that you will see all of a sudden a burst of gravitational wave radiation hitting a detector, and then it will have a particular shape. And the time scale is probably relatively short and should be very distinctive compared with usual astrophysical signatures, like from binary, say, black hole collapse, for example, because those time scales are much longer than gravitational bursts coming from cosmic strings. Okay? So it's something that they can definitely measure, they certainly, LIGO people have certainly templates for gravitational wave bursts coming from cusps and kinks of cosmic strings. So this is what the Damore Vilenkin calculated using the amount of density of cosmic string we expect, amount of cusps and kinks get produced, and interaction strength. If you take abelian Higgs model or Nambu Goto, the interaction probability P is 1. This is coming from two strings interacting. But if you have cosmic string coming from string theory, sometimes it can be smaller. Okay. So they also map it in. So this is the kind of signal they will have coming from, okay, is the H is the the amount of the amplitude of the gravitational wave coming in. And then here is the LIGO 1, that's the sensitivity that LIGO 1 can reach. And here's LIGO 2, the sensitivity can reach. And so if you take the probability to be 1, it's given by something like this as a function of the cosmic string tension. Okay? So here I give the number, which is roughly what cosmic string coming from brain inflation would predict. Roughly the range is given roughly this. Okay? And so you see that as far as LIGO 2 goes, doesn't matter which value you have within this range, and doesn't matter what the rate of interaction is, the whole range is covered. That means LIGO 2 will be, or advanced LIGO will be sensitive to the whole range. Okay? So if your cosmic string tension is around here, suppose the CSL one is correct, then they will really, LIGO 1 even have a chance to detect that. So this is, in a sense, that if LIGO 2 does not see cosmic strings, then one can say that the cosmic string produced by brain inflation, that scenario is probably wrong. So in that sense, it's falsifiable. Of course, this probability interaction also may change somewhat if we consider the more complicated one. This is for PQ, but in other cases, things will be different, although we don't know how they are. But this gives you a, certainly the interaction probability cannot be larger than 1. Okay? So the reason that this happened is because when the interaction probability is small, then the density will be bigger. So typically, the density of cosmic strings is like 1 over p. Okay? So that tells you as p gets smaller, then there will be more cosmic strings. More cosmic string will be more cusp, more kink, and more gravitational wave bursts. Okay. And this have folded into the density, which they really take the billion Higgs model, the simplest scenario. And they have taken what kind of string evolution will be, what kind of loops they will be, how many kinks typically you expect, how many wiggles you expect, and then folded in with how strong the gravitational wave burst, because if it's close by, that the burst obviously stronger than if it is far away. Okay? And they fold all those plus the sensitivity of the LIGO 1 and LIGO 2. Okay, so, and if you have LISA, then actually it's even better. Okay, but LIGO, advanced LIGO probably is within a few years. LIGO 1 is working now, so it's something that we can definitely keep an eye on. So the other thing is interesting is that, which I'm not going to discuss much, is that if you have two cosmic strings which move rapidly, very rapidly, by each other, then if it's so rapid that the G mu 8 pi gamma is bigger than 2, then you can actually go around, and as you go around this, you're going backward in time. So it's like a time machine. Okay, so this is shown by Gott. The solution is quite simple to get. That if this is satisfied, means that they're very relativistic, or the G mu is big, then going around will travel backward in time. Okay. But unfortunately, as far as we can analyze, that this is totally unstable. So in real life, this won't happen. So let me summarize a little bit. So we essentially have said that the superstring theory may be testable, but instead of going to accelerator physics to look for extra particles or extra interactions, which actually can be reached if the cosmic string scale is TeV scale. Okay? If the cosmic string tension or cosmic string scale is TeV instead of close to gut scale, then actually LHC will be able to produce phenomenon which will be very spectacular, including black holes, of particle moving to the extra dimensions and like missing energy, and certainly testable. However, if you want to take the simple scenario and say that it will must satisfy the inflationary scenario, then the density perturbation magnitude forces the cosmic string tension to be around gut scale. Okay? So now you can jiggle the models and do something which a lot of gymnastics to make it still TeV scale, but it's very, very artificial and difficult. So generically, if you want to satisfy the density perturbation measured by the cosmic microwave background, and doesn't matter you took brain inflation or other scenario, generically the superstring tension superstring scale will be around gut scale. So it's very hard to produce objects that can be tested by the lab. However, as we say, if you go to cosmological conditions, and lo and behold, there's the possibility of brain inflation and cosmic string production where the cosmic string actually is stretched across the sky. Okay. So that they will produce very distinct signatures. And our experience from experimental achievements in the past years that if you can measure something, detect something in a year, then within 10 years you can analyze it quantitatively, and in 20 years you can do precision measurements. So this suggests that if we discover it, then we can actually study its signatures and properties and measure all of them. There's a lot of open questions. I leave it just here, and I'll just end to say that there's a lot more things we can do and study, and it's certainly just sort of a work in progress. Thank you.